Hello, you're listening to Playback Daily. It's Friday the 14th of March. I'm Louise Herity and here's some of what's coming up.
This doesn't feel incomplete. It actually feels very nicely rounded. It's sort of glib. I'm not sure how seriously you're supposed to take it, but it's very entertaining. And there's some lovely underacting from both, actually, not so much from Kate Blanchett, but from Michael Fassbender.
There are so many preservatives and chemicals and, you know, it's one of the top 10 of ultra-processed foods nowadays. And so in the book, I'm trying to encourage people to have a go at making their own bread.
I bring the big news. It's double. You got to fill these big shoes. Passing on the torch to the young crew. They got a good news story showing you the power and glory.
Along with all the St. Patrick's Day festivities on over the weekend, there's plenty of new releases at the cinema, as we found out on Thursday night's Arena. The first of two movies being reviewed here stars our own Michael Fassbender and Kate Blanchett. Here's presenter Kay Sheehy with movie reviewers Ruth Barton and Paul Whittington.
Ruth, we'll start with Black Bag, a spy film by Steven Soderbergh with a couple of spies literally at its centre. Tell us a little bit about this is George and Catherine, played by Michael Fassbender and Kate Blanchett.
Yes, yeah, so the background to this film is that Steven Soderbergh works with the same writer, David Koepp, and he's written, this is the third film, and he said, long time ago, he said to David Koepp, I think you're the person to redo Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. And so this is like a kind of, you know, subterfuge reworking of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
The famous Edward Albee play.
Yeah, that's right.
No, indeed.
Sniping couple.
It doesn't take too long to work that one out. The one that Mike Nichols directed to in the 60s for film. And so it starts with he's in this cyber security, it's like sort of MI, whatever it is, cyber security centre. Michael Fassbender plays George Woodhouse, and a mole tells him that somebody is leaking in the group, and the leak could be coming even from his wife, long-term wife who's been married to for many years, and they are a devoted couple. So in order to try to prize out who's leaking, he invites all the people in his unit to dinner. So you have him and his wife, paid by Kate Blanchett, as you know, and then you have other couples from the group. So you have cybercoms expert Clarissa, who's played by Marissa Abella. You have the company psychiatrist Zoe, played by Naomi Harris. You have James, who's just been promoted, played by Reggie Jean Page. And Freddie, Tom Burke from Strike. You'll remember the Strike thrillers. And they're all variously couples, but of course everybody's being unfaithful to everybody else. And this will all come out during the dinner. And
okay, we have a clip, set up, because they're just talking about the dinner here. Michael Fassbender, who plays George Woodhouse, and Kate Blanchett as his wife, Catherine, discuss the dinner they're about to host.
I can feel when you're watching me.
Sorry.
I like it.
I understand this is not the casual dinner you'd prefer.
Yeah, it's an unusual group. Data scraper, two agents, and the in-house shrink. What are we hunting this time?
Severus.
And you think one of them took it?
Possibly.
It's been a while since we had a traitor to dinner. At least knowingly.
We shouldn't be discussing this.
No, probably not. I would have thought you'd start with polygraphs.
I wanted to try something more elegant first.
What's on the menu?
Fun and games.
Will there be a mess to clean up?
With any luck.
It's spoiling for a good fight. George Woodhouse, played by Michael Fassbender, and Kate Blanchett, played by who plays Catherine. Paul, it's all very arch.
Well, it is. Actually, the Virginia Woolf thing, that totally defeats me. I miss that totally. The films it reminds me of are the sort of Harry Palmer, Ipcrest Files, sort of these very kind of cool, kind of rather arid 60s things, and some of the John le Carré. And this pair, they're actually a loving couple, which is the only aspect of that film that I didn't really buy into, because they're kind of, I didn't quite believe them, but they look tremendous. And it's actually, it's a, a lot of Steven Soderbergh films, we were saying this the last time, he's very clever and he's very ingenious and he makes, he's always solving problems visually, but then he moves on to the next thing so that some of his films feel a bit incomplete. This doesn't feel incomplete. It actually feels very nicely rounded. It's sort of glib. I'm not sure how seriously you're supposed to take it, but it's very entertaining. And there's some lovely underacting from both, actually, not so much from Cate Blanchett, but from Michael Fassbender. And that dinner scene, that is a bit Virginia Woolf. That's very, very funny.
Yes, Ruth, there's the great set pieces. We set up that one, the first one, which is the dinner party with the other spies, where the Michael Fassbender character is trying to find out which one has gone rogue. And then there are other set pieces as well.
Yeah, and the bit we didn't get to in that dialogue is where he warns her not to eat the chana masala because he's put a truth drug in it. So they're even more forthcoming than they might have been when they played this sort of game in which you have to basically spill your next door neighbour's secrets. So there are three really key set pieces in this. The first is the dinner party sequence, which ends up with one of the guests stabbing one of the other guests in the hand with a knife. Then there's the polygraph test that he does eventually do, which is incredibly edited. And he edits his own films under a pseudonym. And you mean
the scene is incredibly edited?
Yeah, the scene is incredibly well edited.
Very nicely written too.
Very nice. Because you're seeing one person be polygraphed, but then you're going over the voiceover to the next person. So it's always moving very smoothly. That's a kind of Soderbergh trait, those edits. That's the next one. It's a fantastic sequence. And then there's a final dinner party sequence, but they don't actually get their dinner, they just get the truth.
Don't even get a glass of wine. They just get a lot of truth.
Yeah. They're hoping for a nice dinner and they're not getting it.
The Severus, which is mentioned there, is the kind of the MacGuffin. It's some kind of, a very clever tech weapon. It doesn't matter what it is because it's just the thing that's propelling the action. And it's very nicely orchestrated, actually. It has... A very nice, wry sense of humour that manages to be very British, even though it's not made by British people, the writer and the filmmaker.
And our own spy, 007, Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, he is. And he plays this rather supercilious boss of bosses. And there's a very funny moment where Michael Fassbender, he's looking in at a meeting he's not invited to. And Pierce Brosnan places this thing that turns the glass opaque. I wish I had one of them. But he's actually a lot of fun in it.
Right, so are they all having far too much fun for the viewer, or are we along with most of the jokes, Ruth?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like kind of ha 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 joke. It's just you're kind of appreciating this play that's going on. So on the one hand, it kind of works as a spy thriller. I mean, there is the MacGuffin, people have stolen something.
It's
there's
kind
Russian
of an
spies.
Anti-James Bond, or the opposite. Like it's like a grown-up spy thriller in that it's all about people thinking and talking and trying to outwit each other. It's very enjoyable, I think.
Very, very enjoyable. Yeah. And it's about relationships. And it's also about a long married couple and their relationship with each other because they're spies, they can lie to each other and nobody trusts anybody because they're spies. And the film is called Black Bag because if they don't want to discuss something with the other one, they say black bag. And that means it's out of bounds. You can't discuss it. So when you have a marriage based on, lies, secrets and deception and a black bag, it's an interesting marriage. And it is
seems
a very sexy marriage.
Yeah,
and makes for a good film, I think.
Oh, very enjoyable. I loved it.
Stars out of five from you, Ruth.
I gave it 4 out of 5. I could have even moved up, but 4 out of 5, I thought it was great.
Yeah, 4 for me. It's very enjoyable. And actually, it doesn't detain. It's 90-something minutes. People should learn from that.
Yeah, snappy edit.
OK, well, that's 4 out of 5 from both of you for Black Bag. Now we're moving on to Opus, which is all about fame and cult status. Paul, what brings together these characters? There's A.O. Edebiri, the people will know from The Bear, and then John Malkovich, who is playing a pop star.
He is.
A reclusive pop star.
Moretti, Alfred Moretti. Yeah, this is, if the film we just discussed was a kind of subtle grown-up film, this is not subtle. Ayo Edebiri's character Ariel she's working at a kind of celebrity magazine, and she's a kind of junior writer, and she's always coming up with good ideas, and her editor is always saying, "I don't think so," and then claiming it's his idea. So that is her role. This guy Moretti has been out of action since the 90s. He was a great sort of club music guy and dancer, though that's kind of hard to believe when you see John Malkovich actually dancing. But and he's everybody's fascinated by him. He was extremely famous. He hasn't done anything for years. He announces in a very grand way he's going to be releasing a new album, and he invites this group of people who all have a connection with him, except for Ariel, who's invited as well, which is mysterious, to his ranch in New Mexico. They all go. They all have reasons to be nervous because some of them weren't that nice to him, the critic and a TV Benny, and et cetera, et cetera. And they get there, and it's all a little bit strange. It's all a bit strange.
And John Malkovich sings.
He does.
Because in Opus, he plays Moretti, as you said, the legendary pop star. And in this scene, he performs for his invited guests. Tell you, the control room just love Moretti. They just want to listen to it all night long. So Nile Rodgers did the music, and there he is camping it up, John Malkovich, but it's his own voice.
It is. And I mean, this is really John Malkovich's show, this whole movie. And I kind of felt he wasn't really prepared to share because every scene that he's in, he's acting in a way. He's almost acting out himself. And he's dressed up in this kind of crazy over-the-top kind of glam rock, Elton John kind of gear with massive, you know, platform shoes. Oh, and he's reasonably fit. He can kind of move still.
Maybe he feels he has to save it.
Yeah, maybe somebody told him this movie is actually going down the sink. So, you know, what do you want to do about it? But he's taken his money out of it.
He is a singer. He is bringing out new music, but he's really a cult leader.
Well, yeah, this is we're not giving anything away because it seems to be quite obvious from the moment they get there. Are lots of children around and nobody seems to know, which is always a telltale cult giveaway.
Yeah.
Nobody seems to know who they are. Everybody dresses the same in this kind of weird kind of Californian monkey way, and there are monkish way, I should say, and there are these strange kind of painful rituals they have to go through, but nobody's saying anything. And actually, I slightly disagree in terms of Malkovich, in that because he can be over the top, he was kind of under and quite charismatic, so that you almost believed in him, but not in everything around him. And the other actors, you're right about this, are like Juliette Lewis and people like that, are not really given anything very interesting to do. Trying to operate as a kind of a satire on the horrors of celebrity culture, but it would have needed to be funny in order to do that, and it isn't really.
Oh, right. And is it thrilling in any way?
It's violent
in danger?
At certain moments.
it's very violent, but one of the most violent things that the cult members can do is they have to shuck oysters. And so they all have
but
these
they don't
scars.
Eat them.
And
they, That's what
because
really
they're going
killed
for pearls.
Me.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just chucking them out. So they have this kind of massive sort of tent where, you know, the selected cult member of the day sits just shucking oysters. And so every time they cut themselves themselves, they get another star. And this is one of the more violent aspects of this kind of, I just thought, ludicrous film.
All right. And is it worth the entry fee for John Malkovich? You seem not to agree. Ruth is throwing eyes up there.
Like, I'm not on TikTok, but probably you'll find it all over on TikTok anyway. It's kind of aimed for TikTok sort of stuff that, you know.
There are bits and pieces of it that are visually interesting, and it sort of initially promises something interesting because when you see him first, you think, and there's this dinner where he's mildly musing, but it's just not well written enough to work.
Yeah, it's got creepy stuff about you know, women being groomed for him. I won't go into detail, but actually, I find that one unnecessary.
Yes, the song goes a bit creepy at the end.
It's
as not, well.
Yeah, there's a kind of creepy stuff all around it.
Okay, so stars out of five for Opus from you, Paul.
Two.
Two. And from you, Ruth?
I scraped 1.5 along shucking oysters.
They made you hungry.
So that's one film to check out and one to maybe avoid, as heard on last night's Arena. Staying with the movie theme, Claire Byrne was talking about the business of cinema and how the industry has struggled post-COVID. She was joined by Adam Maguire from the RTE Business Desk to discuss.
So Adam, let's take a look at what's happening money-wise with cinemas right now. How much money did they make last year? Do we know?
Well, in the UK and Ireland, just over £1 billion at the box office, which is flat year on year. Globally, though, the movie box office generated $32.2 billion in revenue last year. Down around 3% on 2023. And it's notable because it's the first time since the pandemic that box office revenues fell year on year. But it also means that the industry is even further away from the post-pandemic recovery that many had been hoping for and waiting for. So revenues back in 2019 were around $42.5 billion. So that's more than 24% drop when you look at the 24 figures compared to that pre-pandemic peak. And bear in mind, we've had quite significant inflation, as we all know, since then. So really, revenues would have to be much higher than that $42.5 billion figure in order to actually be on a par in real terms with 2019.
So pretty much everything else is back, you know, to pre-pandemic levels.
Yeah.
What's happened with the cinemas?
Well, I suppose it is worth giving a bit of context to figures, because 2019 is a particularly tough year to compete with. That was the year that 8 films took in more than $1 billion at the box office globally, including Avengers Endgame, which took in nearly $2.8 billion on its own. It's the second highest grossing film of all time. So a tough one to compete with. 7 of the 8, by the way, billion-dollar films were Disney releases in 2019, showing just how dominant they were in that year. 2019 was a big year for cinema. Lots of blockbusters. They tend to bring in the big bucks. So it was going to be a hard act to follow for any year, really. And some will argue that the 2024 figures were always going to be weak because the Hollywood writer's strike really took its toll. Now, that was in 2023. It ended in September of that year, but the knock-on effect has lasted much longer because it delayed releases, it put productions on hold, it led to a pause in development of new films, and even when a deal was struck in September 23, it took time then for the Hollywood machine to kind of get back up and running. So as a result, the 2024 release schedule, certainly the first half of the year, was fairly threadbare, which obviously had an effect on ticket sales. You know, if you look at the North American box office, for example, the revenues in the whole year were 4% lower compared to 2023. So pretty much on a par with the global decline that we saw. But some in the industry were probably quite relieved with that, because when they looked at the January to June figures, sales were down 27.5%. So it was looking like it was going to be a really, really bad year for them. But then, you know, they hit the summer, got the big releases like Inside Out 2, Deadpool and Wolverine, Moana 2, all Disney again, by the way. They all took $1 billion or more each, and that softened the blow of what happened year on year. And the hope in the industry is that with, you know, a normal full release schedule in this year for the whole year, things should pick up again.
Okay, but there's no doubt people's habits, Adam, they've definitely changed.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, it's been a slow and clearly still ongoing recovery for cinemas. And the early stages of the post kind of lockdown phase, the hope was that this was just because of nervousness around being in confined spaces with strangers, and, you know, we'd eventually get over that. But, you know, as time has gone on, as you say, not everything else has recovered. Cinema hasn't. It's clear that there's more to it, because you know, people have basically gotten more comfortable with staying at home and watching movies there. They probably have a decent TV. They might even have a decent sound system, and they're finding the experience much more enjoyable than going out. And lots of obvious reasons for that. You know, they're in the comfort of their own home. They can pause the TV whenever they want to go to the toilet or go make a cup of tea. You know, best of all, they're, you know, not sitting behind the person who's constantly checking their phone and that light shining and catching your eye. The couple behind you chatting away, annoying you as well. It's probably cheaper as well, because you could download a new release or even subscribe to a service for a month for less than the cost of a couple of cinema tickets. So you're saving money.
Although I still think it feels really expensive, because we were looking at Wicked, which we had seen in the cinema, but it was around the €20 mark.
Yeah,
to have it at home.
But I suppose if you're talking about a family, then I know, that probably works out cheaper. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. The brand new releases can be still quite expensive digitally. And you know, part of the difference, though, as well, is that you know that if it's a new release in the cinema or it's a new release even available to download, you can just wait a little while and it'll be available. You know, we all have so much choice now with Netflix and Disney. We all have things on our watch list that we have to get to that we just haven't had time to see. You kind of say, well, why would I bother going out to watch something when I know there's stuff here that I can watch as well? And even if it is a big release that you really want to see, unless, you know, you really, really want to go and see it, just wait a couple of weeks.
Resist
and it will come
the
out.
Instant gravitation pull, yeah, gravitational
and,
pull.
And, you know, the studios are kind of complicit in this as well, because I remember, you know, back in the good old days, the release schedule, you know, it came out in the cinemas and it was a long time before you would see it on video, and even longer than another year or two before it was on TV. Now it's much, much shorter. It's weeks in some cases, possibly, you know, a week or two. So, you know, I just have to wait a little while and I'll be able to watch it at home. So unless it's something really, really drawing me in, there's no point in going to the cinema anymore. And that's what a lot of people are feeling now, really.
Okay, so what are the studios doing then to get people to go back to the cinemas, or have they given up essentially because they're putting them on the telly so fast?
They haven't really, but it's an interesting challenge for them, because, you know, they've always found ways to survive the various threats that have come along. You know, if you think back to the 50s when TV started coming into the household, people thought cinema's done now, it's cooked, you know, but they kept people interested with, you know, amazing innovations like Technicolor as a way, you know, that was the edge they had over the home TV. Then you started getting colour TVs, so they started relying more and more then on the big epic films and the blockbusters that just didn't look good on a small screen. And, you know, the blockbuster has kind of been central to how cinema has stayed relevant for a long time, because, you know, even in the home video and HD and 4K days, it's still about, you know, oh, it's the big experience and you have to see it on the big screen to really enjoy it. But that's not quite been the case this time, because, you know, we have had some blockbusters that have done well in recent years, but a lot of blockbusters post-pandemic have lost a lot of money. You know, going back to Disney, who have had their successes, they've also lost more than $1 billion over the course of 2022 and 23 through multiple blockbuster flops like Lightyear, The Marvels, the last Indiana Jones movie, Wish, which was kind of meant to be the centrepiece to their 100th anniversary celebrations, and no one really went to see it. It was a complete flop. So, you know, there have been lucrative blockbusters in recent years, but they're a much riskier proposition now. You're spending a lot of money and there's no guarantee you're going to get it back. Instead, what we're seeing doing well are things like family movies, Moana 2, Despicable Me 4. Dog Man is one of the highest grossing films of this year so far. It'll change in the summertime, but at the moment it's done very well for itself. And I suppose that, you know, points to the kind of pester power of kids, which is important, but also the fact that parents will bring their kids to the cinema as a treat or a rainy day thing, or just to kind of keep them entertained for an hour or two. Even though they have Netflix at home, they'll still spend the money and go to the cinema. Other big successes, though, have been around what you might call the kind of event releases. These are the films that kind of have a fandom around them, and the films tap into them. So Barbie was a great example of that. Became a viral sensation. The audience were doing half the promotional work for them during the release of that. You mentioned Wicked, another really great example of that. You know, obviously it had an inbuilt fan base through the musical. People were going to the cinema dressed up. They were singing along because they already knew the songs as well. And no harm that they had that really kind of compelling press tour with Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande that kind of just kept people really interested in it. So that was a really good kind of event film that just made people, they had to go to see this film as a result of that.
Holding space for each other
exactly,
on the press
holding
tour.
Space.
So the cinemas then, what are they doing to capitalise on those sort of things?
Yeah, well, I suppose this idea of cinema as an event is really catching on. But, you know, there's only a handful of films that can kind of create that buzz like Wicked does and like Barbie did. So cinemas are trying to find new ways of having events, so to speak. So concert movies and live music are a good example of that. The cinema release of Taylor Swift's Eras Tour took in $260 million at the box office in 2023. And again, it was going to be on Disney, or it already was on Disney, but people still went to the cinema to sing along and to experience it. You know, we had more recently Talking Heads, Stop Making Sense, getting a global cinema release to mark its 40th anniversary. You know, cinemas are putting on live concerts, plays, operas, musicals. The idea being, I suppose, if you didn't get a ticket or you don't want to travel to London or wherever it might be on, you can still experience it in an audience in a kind of live setting. They're also showing a lot more classic films, maybe to mark an anniversary or a kind of season of films about a genre, a director, or an actor. Sometimes they're just responding to the fact that these films have, you know, suddenly developed an ironic fan base or have become known to a new audience through GIFs and memes. So they say, well, we put this on in the cinema so they know what it's all about. Also tapping into fandom in other ways around existing films, like, you know, hosting a 12 or 13 hour marathon for The Lord of the Rings Extended Edition Trilogy, so you can go and sit and spend the whole day watching those three films. They're also trying to do more interactive events as well. For I spotted that The Lighthouse in Dublin Smithfield is this month hosting a Solve Along a Murder She Wrote, which promises a theme tune, sing along, a Cabot Cove quiz and a competition to see who can spot the murderer in an episode of Murder She Wrote first. So again, trying to get the audience involved, making an event and make it something a bit different.
So how else are they changing? Are they changing physically how they look and
so on? They are a bit, like, so we're seeing a lot of investment in cinemas to make them more attractive. In the US now, AMC Theatres announced plans last year for a $1.5 billion investment to improve the picture quality, the sound quality and also the kind of premium kind of experience as well. So more comfortable seats, more leg room and so on. We've also discussed before how cinemas here offer some kind of scheme for unlimited, you know, the monthly subscription for unlimited or near unlimited access to films. People may have also noticed that the price of cinema tickets are often actually quite reasonable now. They had been kind of getting a bit ridiculous. They've gone down a lot now. Yeah. The idea now is that get in and spend your money on your popcorn and your drinks, and that's how they kind of make the money as well. But it's not just the major multiplexes either. We're also seeing in Ireland and in other countries the growth of kind of smaller niche cinemas as well. So I mentioned The Lighthouse is a good example of that, but others then maybe, you know, they let people have proper meals while they're watching the film or have cocktails rather than just having popcorn and soft drinks. And again, it's about, you know, creating an experience and a night out and, you know, something more than just go and sit in the cinema in the old fashioned way, because, you know, that's something you can't get anywhere else. So it turns into more of a, you know, a night out with friends or a date night kind of thing rather than just sitting in the cinema like the old fashioned
way. Their problem is a lot of people want to be in their trackies.
Yeah,
at
they
home,
want to be comfortable.
On the sofa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's hard to compete with that.
Really is on a Friday night. It really is. It's very attractive.
Do you want to get ready and go and spend money and all that, yeah.
Adam Maguire from the RTE Business Desk on Today with Claire Byrne. A regular Friday feature on Oliver Callan's show is the visiting critic when he gets a well-known face to try out something new and review it. And this week it was former RTE News presenter Brian Dobson who tried rapping, of all things.
So we definitely thought rap music would not be, you're not sitting at home listening to a lot of Kendrick Lamar or Jay-Z.
This was entirely new for me. Was uncharted territory.
Yeah. Yes. Sailing, okay. Using sailing metaphors and everything. Yeah. Okay, so you went. Who did you meet? You went down to Knocknaheeny in Cork to the Cabin Crew Studio.
To the Cabin Crew Studio in Knocknaheeny on the north side of Cork, which is a terrific suburb, just a couple of miles from the centre of Cork City. It's famous as the headquarters of the Apple, Ireland's Apple.
Really? That's where it's based.
So the Cabin Studio is housed in literally a couple of porta cabins, which is where it gets the name, beside the local secondary school there, Terence McSweeney Community School. And they run rap classes for young primary school, national school students, for teenagers and for adults as well. So I went along on Monday evening and they were having a lesson or a class for the teenagers, and that was followed by the adults. In all, I think they provide classes, if you want to call them that, for about 50 young children across that.
And it's not for profit, it's a community.
No, it's a community. You know. Yeah, it's a community initiative. Yeah, very much. I mean, it's funded by the Music Neighbourhoods is one of the people in Music Network Ireland, I think, as well. So it's...
And the people will know I played a little bit of The Spark at the start, which is the Cabin Crew, with the Listoon Varna crew. You were just with the Cabin Crew.
Yeah.
And they were long listed for a Grammy. So you were in very good company.
Yeah.
What did they ask you to do, or what do you...
Well, the way it works is, let me describe the cabin first of all. As I say, it's a couple of porta cabins, and you walk into it and there's some sort of studio areas and recording areas. There's some sofas, there's some computers around, there's a little kitchen, and everybody's sitting around and they're writing away when I arrived. So the teenagers have been given a theme. or they'd been asked themselves to come up with a word or a theme and then to write a rap on that theme. Thank so you. I came in, I introduced myself, and we started talking about news, and they were asked then, well, how about doing a rap about news, something about the news?
That
so that's
makes
how
sense.
That kind of sort of started to develop. So I was kind of getting into this as well, so I kind of started playing around with a few ideas, and they did, and they it's a very collaborative exercise. The teenagers did their sort of rap, and then the adults arrived. A lot of the adults would be parents maybe of some of the younger, of the, some of the children who were involved. So, and then we kind of continued this, and they did their own raps around news, and then I worked on my one, and out of it came what I think we're going to hear in
it's
a
called,
few minutes.
It's called Big News. Who helped you record this?
Well, Gary McCarthy is the artistic director. Gary runs it, and he really is the guy that holds the whole thing together. And Gary brought me back the next morning. We worked on it some more. We refined it some more. Now, what you'll hear is all in one take, as it were, but it wasn't all in one take because I had to stop and start. It's much more difficult than it seems. You know, you think, oh, you're just talking to the music, but you're talking to the beat. Now, on the other hand, it's a great way to express yourself because you don't have to be musical. You don't have to have a singing voice. If you can talk, and if you can follow a beat, you can rap. And if you've something to say. So what the essence of rap, and it comes out of hip hop, I think, in the Bronx among African Americans.
I'll bow to your greater judgment on this.
So this is all about doing very thorough research on behalf of the Oliver Callan Show. It's about authenticity. So you're expressing. So it's who you are, and it's kind of interesting because Gary makes the point that it allows the youngsters to have a kind of alter ego. And to express things that maybe they might find difficult to express just in normal conversation or maybe, you know,
The avenue.
Yeah, this is the way you can do it.
And who wrote the masterpiece we're about to listen to?
It's a bit of me, a bit of Gary, a bit of some of the students, a bit of some of the parents. So the
Tiny and MC Bucky were involved.
So we got Tiny and MC Bucky to come back. Yeah. So Tiny and who are two of the teenagers.
Yep. Tiny is Darren Stewart, 16-year-old.
Right. Yeah, and Bucky
is
Aaron Hennessy.
He's 15.
So and both veterans, by the way, of RTE. I think they've both been on the Late Late Toy Show in previous years. So they're well able to stand up and do it. So Gary brought them back in the next morning and asked them to kind of do a little insert into my rap. So you'll hear they appear or you hear
this
them
the
as well. Again on the theme of the news.
And like even describing this, you're even moving with a certain
beat. Well, actually, it's very important. apparently, it's very important that when you're rapping, you're giving it that sort of physical engagement as well.
Well, without further ado, Big News featuring Snoop Dogg, whatever we'll call him, from the cabin. Here we go. Let's enjoy.
Good evening. The main news tonight. I'm back for one show only, but I'm bringing the cabin crew with me.
I bring the big news. It's double. You gotta fill these big shoes. Passing on the torch to the young crew. They got a good news story, showing you the power and glory. I got a track to do, I'm gonna rap the news. It's the D-O-double-B-O with the cabin crew in Knocknaheeny, and yes, it's so fun. Let's get the news done. It's not the 6-1 in the cabin tonight. It's a beautiful sight, chilling with the crew, and we're spitting some rhymes. The rappers are composing, their talent is showing. They're the big news today, and their sparks are glowing. They rap it out loud, their pain and joy. No matter where they go, they're always making noise. It's got the cabin correspondents standing by. They're right here in the booth, let me pass the mic.
I got some news to write, but I'ma tell you mine. When I'm writing raps, I start to lose track of time. Writing better than ever, you know I'll do this forever. You think I'm stopping them, never. These bears are golden like treasure.
Today's top story, what's the crack, son? Channel Tiny, never got your back turned, only turned up. That's the way you gotta act, son. Better tune in or back up. The best news in Cork, so you better be engaged.
Bring the big news, it's double. You gotta fill these big shoes. Passing on the torch to the young crew, they got a good news story, showing you the power and glory. I bring the big news, it's double, you gotta fill these big shoes. Passing on the torch to the young crew, they got a good news story, showing you the power and glory.
Oh, wow.
And that's the news tonight. Thanks for listening.
Big news from Dabo. I think that deserves a bit of clapping and cheering there. Party piece people. That was Brian Dobson as we'd never heard him before. It sounded like you enjoyed that.
I had a great time. I really
yeah. it's like you were very good, and then when you hear the pro rappers coming in, you're going, oh yeah, that's,
they're in a whole different league.
I love how you kind of change your accent through it. You were
and probably that's
Gadas
kind of, and that actually probably is not in the spirit of rap. Because, and Gary actually makes the point, when people start doing it, they tend to do that because it comes out of American culture, it comes out of the US, so people tend to put on an American accent.
That's right.
But if you listen to Darren and Aaron there, they're
very
in
Cork.
Their Cork accent.
Pure Cork.
So I was kind of trying to work that out of the rap a bit. And, I mean, some of it just stayed in there. But
but you were chilling with the crew, in your own words. Yeah. You should be very proud of yourself. And I believe Tiny and MC Bucky are actually on the line. Good morning to you both. Yeah. I'd say hello to Tiny, first of all. That's Darren Stewart, 16 years of age. Good morning, Tiny.
Yo, good morning, gang. What's up?
Ah, that was brilliant. Was that you at the end, or was that MC Bucky? I can't really
tell. That was me at the end, yeah.
Oh, fair play to you. You're 16. What are you up to in your life, Darren?
You know, I'm just chilling. I'm in TYA at the moment. I'm just chilling up in the show my body in school, because I just got done Irish class, so I'm kind of in between classes right now doing this interview, so it's pretty chill, you know.
Not
major, like, you know.
Actually, just when I was young, it used to be called TYO, which we called Total Year Off. But but transition, it's really good, because you get to step out and do these kind of things that you can focus your art on.
Yeah, man, it's so chill. Like, I've just been doing nothing but working on, like, movies and, like music the whole year. Like,
what movie did you work on?
Last year, well, I know I wasn't in TY last year, but I was in a movie directed by Brendan Canty called Christy.
Oh.
So that's interesting.
I thought you were going to say like a movie that you just did in TY, but no, this is a real thing.
Oh, no. Yeah, like an actual movie production, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you
wow.
Go.
Okay, that's Tiny. MC Bucky's on the line as well. Good morning.
What's the story?
This is Aaron Hennessy. And you're what age, Aaron?
I'm 15.
15 years of age. And so that means you're what, junior cert or...
Yeah, I'm in junior cert.
Studying hard?
A fair bit.
Just pretend, say yes when you're in the radio. It's grand.
Yeah.
Come here. What did you make, MC Bucky, of Big News starring Snoop Dogg?
I think it was actually very fun to make. Well, Brian's obviously a sound. He's very sound. He's dead sound.
Oh, yeah.
And, it was just a fun track to make.
I think you've kind of changed his life. I've never seen him so chill. Tiny, you were very impressed by a debut performer.
Oh yeah, he's an absolute natural. Fair play to him.
Thanks, lads. That's very kind.
Yeah, he's not going to take any compliments, but he's properly chuffed.
I'll take that.
You got on with the lads, lovely.
They were fantastic. I mean, it took me like from the previous night to the next day, and working with a lot of other people to produce the script, if you like, of that, or the words. But you know, Darren and Aaron, they came across from school. Gary gave them the sort of general thing, do something on news. They went off for about 10 or 15 minutes, I think. Was it, lads? You weren't gone very long. Back they come with what you heard there.
As
and
quick
they
as that.
Recorded straight away, and it's done. And
genius. They're absolutely gone. Genius. And come here, lads. You probably, given your age, we don't expect you to be watching the news. Had you watched the news? Were you familiar with the legend that is Dobbo?
My mom told me about
my
parents and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always the parents, isn't it?
That's fine. We'll take that.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. MC Bucky, you were going to say something there.
My mum told me about him. First of all, I didn't know, because I didn't watch the news, but then my mum was like telling me.
You don't watch the news in general?
No.
How do you find out what's going on in the world then?
TikTok.
Oh no, that's all the answers. Is it the same for you, Tiny?
I'd see news channels on social media, like, so it's kind of the same thing.
Yes, I think that's actually a good point, that it's TikTok, but it could be RT News.
Could be, exactly.
And that's exactly.
You're on social media, aren't you, Oliver? This is going to be...
I am. When I get the time, not very strong. But listen, we better let you get back to a very busy TY day, Tiny. But thanks a million. And also to MC Bucky there as well, Aaron Hennessy and Darren
Stewart. Can I just thank the lads for taking part in this. It was great to meet them. Great to meet all the cabin crew in Knocknaheeny. It was a real delight, and I couldn't have been made more welcome and felt more at home, and it was just a terrific visit overall. I hope I'll be able to get back sometime soon. So thanks, Darren. Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks, Awfully, man. No worries.
Likewise, good luck, lads. And that's a massive thumbs up, really, for the stuff the cabin crew do. They're both, well, the whole cabin crew are Grand Marshals in the St. Patrick's Day parade in Cork as well. And, I'm
and
sure
can I give a shout out for the adult class?
Oh, yeah, that's
because they kind of worked a lot with me to get this together. And that's Jackie, James, Nicola Marie, Ellen, Sally, Adrian, Alex, who are father and son, Noel, Joe, and Rory. And I couldn't have done without them.
That's the song project.
That's it. That's what we're called.
That's what it's called. Yeah. The song project. Yeah. Well, Brian Dobson, absolute pleasure chatting to you.
There's lovely
messages here. Please, Brian Dobson for president, the most eligible person for the post, says Maureen in Cork. Dobbo for president, says another one. You see, everybody now who goes before a mic.
But I know.
You've turned down the memoir. You've turned down the podcast.
I don't want another job.
He's ruled himself out of Horse and Hooked Run.
Former RTE newsreader Brian Dobson, today's visiting critic on the Oliver Callan Show. Claire Byrne's guest was winner of the Great British Bake Off in 2014. She's an accomplished author, and her new book, Green and Easy Kitchen, is all about making eco-friendly choices in the kitchen. Here's Nancy Birthwhistle.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm so excited.
We're delighted to have you here. And I had the opportunity to have your book over the weekend because I knew you were coming in, and I made your beef bourguignon.
Did you?
I did. I made it on Saturday night.
The all-in-one beef bourguignon.
Yeah. And we had it on Sunday. So I did exactly what you said. I left it overnight to get to know the flavours, to get to know each other. And it was delicious. And it was easy, which
is what I want. That's what we want. I realise that there's an appetite now to cook from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you're working or if you've got a family and I've been there, I've done all that. So I understand those pressures. But I think with a little bit of organisation, if things are simple, very few ingredients, and I've tried where I can to say you can use a slow cooker if you want, you can use your oven if you want, you can use the hob for this one if you want, the air fryer where appropriate. So that there's some, I've also tried to include ingredient swaps for, if you haven't got this, you can use that. Just try and be flexible.
Mm-hmm. But you do want us to move away from convenience foods, even things like breadcrumbs, which, we might just pick up. You're explaining to us that we don't really need to buy those. We can make them ourselves.
Yeah. The breadcrumbs one was really interesting because bread, especially mass-produced factory-made bread, which is what's going to go into bought breadcrumbs at the end of the day. There are so many preservatives and chemicals and, it's one of the top 10 of ultra-processed foods nowadays. And so in the book, I'm trying to encourage people to have a go at making their own bread, and it doesn't have to be super difficult. And then with that leftover bread, because you've put your heart and soul into producing a loaf,
don't throw it away.
We're not going to throw it away. But me, in the past, I just used to blitz them up in the machine and put them in the freezer.
Yeah.
And then forget about them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we want a shelf stable, golden, fine golden breadcrumb that we can then use to coat our 90% fish fingers, not 58% that you buy in the supermarket, for the chicken Kiev, for scotch eggs, all those sorts of things. And they'll keep for ages.
So what are we doing then to our breadcrumbs to get them to that stage?
Good point. Right. So we blitz our breadcrumbs, but before we blitz them, we add in for about 250 grams of stale bread, chop it into chunks, a teaspoon of turmeric and a teaspoon of paprika. And that will give you some seasoning and it'll also give you that nice golden colour. Blitz them up, toss them out onto a baking tray. Now, you can put them in a low oven, about 100 degrees, or put them in the oven just after you've turned it off.
Oh, yeah, good
idea.
And
use that residual heat. Stand them over a radiator if you've got a warm room, just long enough until they don't stick to your fingers anymore. And they're just nice and dry and brittle. Then pop them back into the machine because they're still quite whole.
Chunky.
Yeah. Unless you want panko crumbs and leave them like that. Blitz it again to a fine powder into a jar and you've got your gorgeous, gorgeous golden bread.
Now, there's so many things I want to talk to you about. I love the start of the book where you tell us a little bit about your background. And I was so fascinated to see that your mother was not the best cook. This all came from Granny.
Yes, my mother was an awful cook. But we used to eat to live. But when I used to go to my grandmother's house, it was living to eat, because it was, there was always that wholesome home cooking smell going on, whether it be bread. She wasn't a big cake maker, but she made bread, she made pastries, she made her own pork pies, all of those things. As did many people of that generation.
Yes.
You know, that lived through two world wars.
She was doing the basics really well.
But she was doing it really well, and she did it with a passion.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent lots and lots of years with her and just learning on the job, really.
Just on the green side, because the book is called Green and Easy Kitchen, is that informed by your background, your grandmother coming from that generation where they didn't have very much? And is that how you see green living now?
Green for me, it's about honest food, I think. And doing things in a simple way and trying to turn our backs on those ready processed pies, baked goods, ready-made sauces, ready meals, because for them to have the shelf life that they've got to be packed it with excess salts, excess fats,
mm-hmm.
all kinds of... let me give you an example, Claire. The vanilla extract. I started to research vanilla extract because the price of it varies so much. And I think, well, you know, when my kids were growing up, I used to buy vanilla essence, cheap, just to give a bit of flavour to the bakes and what have you. Only to discover that that has never seen a vanilla pod. It's never seen one.
Mm.
It's just a cocktail of synthetic chemicals.
That tastes like vanilla.
The taste of vanilla. Mm-hmm. And even when you go up the price bracket, there is still some of that cocktail added in, even with, you know, the genuine vanilla. So, you know, for the cost of a vanilla pod, an organic vanilla pod, we've got vanilla extract that's going to last forever.
What are you using then? You're getting the pod and scraping out the seeds.
Yes, and then all you need is either vodka or vegetable glycerin. If you want a non-alcoholic
mm-hmm.
version, chop it up. I think I use about 100 ml. Give it a shake. But what you need is time. It takes at least 8 weeks to infuse sufficiently to take on the flavour.
So put that away with the breadcrumbs in the freezer.
Yeah. And then you just use a teaspoon and then top it up with more vodka or more vanilla, more vegetable glycerin.
Right, and you're done. And that's your vanilla flavouring. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about were the oven trays and throwing them into the garden. And I promised listeners that we would talk about this because this is extraordinary. I don't understand how this works.
I don't understand how this works either. But probably about 8 years ago, one of my followers messaged me, and because I'd just started out on this social media green journey, mm-hmm. if you like. And I was talking about oven cleaning because, of course, oven cleaning products are loaded with chemicals, caustic soda
they
and the rest.
Catch in the back of your throat, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And you have to be careful how you dispose of it and everything else. And I thought there must be, you know, a better way of doing this, which there is, and you can use bicarbonate of soda mixed to a paste and all the rest of it. Steam your oven first to soften the burnt on debris. But then one of my followers said, in South Africa we just throw them out on the grass. And I thought, I'm going to have a go at this. So I did, and I videoed the lot, and I said, right, Pauline in South Africa tells me that I should throw my oven shelves out on the grass. Let's see if it works. 24 hours later, picked it up, wiped off all that.
What's going on?
I know. It's fabulous.
And do you have to turn them on the grass? Or
depends how long the grass is. I mean, if you've got long grass, and in the summer, you know when you've got fresh grass clippings?
Yes.
If you've just cut your lawn. I lay the shelf on, cover with the grass clippings.
No.
And that works even better because you've got a sort of steamy...
So there's some sort of chemical reaction going on.
I think it must be humidity that... Yeah, but it, yeah,
But it works.
It works. Mother Nature can do wonderful things.
How extraordinary that is. What a trick. The other thing you have in there, which is a little more simple probably and easier to explain, is using your lemons to make cleaning products, which I think is a great idea. So simple. But how many times do we squeeze a lemon for a recipe or use the rind for a recipe? And we end up in a few days looking at the sad old lemon and saying, goodbye, your time is up. Yeah. We shouldn't do that, should we?
There's so lemons are so fantastic. I mean, to start off by extending the shelf life of your lemons, put them in a jar of water, in a screw top jar, and just keep them in the fridge. I kept a lemon for 13 weeks because I've put all these things to the test, you see.
But is that not a mushy mess?
They go soft, but if you take them out of the water and just leave them on the side when the day that you want to use them, those skins will firm up again. So they're firm enough to then
use it as you would a fresh lemon.
And then spent lemons, you can descale your kettle. You can. I use them to infuse my cleaning vinegar because some people say, yeah, but the idea of using vinegar in cleaning products,
it's smelly.
It's not really what I want.
Yeah.
So I have a big jar, put my spent lemons in, fill up with vinegar, leave them 2 or 3 days, and then you'll start to see it take on a sort of yellowy colour and then a citrus fragrance rather than that pungent vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
And then I use it in a whole range of cleaning products.
So you just, do you put a spray top on that and use it directly, or are you mixing it with other things?
I mix various things. I have what I call my all-purpose spray.
Nancy's all-purpose spray.
Nancy's all-purpose. And it's sort of anti-bac because there's water in it, there's lemony vinegar, and there's also surgical spirit. And so that it does a marvellous job.
So you're using that on kitchen worktops and
worktops, glass, mirrors, car interiors. Because it's acidic, I wouldn't recommend it for granite tops or natural stone or marble, anything like that. But I've got my cream cleaner.
Which you make as well, do you?
Which I make as well.
Go on.
And that's just 100 grams of, for a little starter pack to get you going, 100 grams of bicarbonate of soda. Mix it all in a jar, 100 grams of bicarbonate of soda. And then you know the little bottles, you'll find them in the baking aisle in the supermarket, of vegetable glycerin.
Yeah.
There's 35 mils, I think, in one of those. Pour that in. And then a drizzle of eco-friendly washing up liquid, not lemon, because it'll make the bicarb fizz and the two work against each other. Mix those together with a teaspoon. Did I say about 10, 15 mils of eco-friendly washing up liquid?
Yeah,
and you've got
a
lovely smooth cream that will remove the bumps off your car, any scuffs off your car.
What?
Yes.
It's a revelation.
Yeah, when I had a bit of a do with a rubber bollard. It got that off, without, because it doesn't scratch or anything. Mm-hmm. It's non-acidic, so it's very kind.
So you can't use your lemon spray on your natural worktops, but you're using this?
Yes.
Sounds like a polish, though, as well.
And what's amazing about some of these I call them eco-friendly recipes, is that they have multiple uses. Mm-hmm. So the cream cleaner will dissolve a grease mark on your clothes. So you rub it onto your clothes, put them in the washing machine.
That's a great idea. And also, we know that we're washing our clothes too much anyway, aren't we? So if you can remove a stain from a jumper without washing the whole jumper, you're going to be kind to your jumper and probably kind to the environment as well, right?
Yeah. The thing is, I spend so much time on it, Claire, because I believe it. I'm passionate about it. And I think it's probably now become my life's work. I just love it. And if I can, I love it when followers send me a question and they'll say, you know, I've got this stain on such and such. It could be anything. Have you any ideas? And we'll make it work. We'll get there.
You'll find a solution.
Author and former winner of the Great British Bake Off, Nancy Birthwistle, on Today with Claire Byrne. Also on the show, we heard the bizarre story of the US influencer who has caused a stir after snatching a baby wombat in Australia.
You might have come across this viral social media video this morning showing an American tourist picking up and walking off with a wild baby wombat. It has sparked outrage across Australia. There have been widespread calls for the woman's deportation. The woman in question is the influencer Sam Jones, and she's believed now to have fled Australia in the wake of the controversy. Just before we talk to Phil Mercer, BBC Australia correspondent, let's have a listen to the audio from the video that she made.
Just caught a baby wombat. Look at the mother. It's like, oh, it's chasing after her.
I caught a baby wombat. Okay, mama's right there. And she is pissed. Let's let him go.
No, he's right.
All right, let's let him go.
Does leave you speechless, really, when even just listening to it there. Phil Mercer, as I said, is with us. So, Phil, can you talk us through what we were hearing there?
Well, those with good hearing would have had the sound of that Joey wombat, that infant wombat, being very clearly audible. The animal, we understand, was hissing with what environmentalists say was fear and stress, overlaid, of course, with the laughter of not only the American influencer Sam Jones, but also what appears to be an Australian man who was filming all of this. We don't know where it was filmed. We don't know when. What we do know is that this video clip that was briefly posted on Instagram has ignited immense anger around Australia, even going to the very top. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, very critical of this woman for snatching the baby away from its mother and it's stress. A lot of condemnation for this influence.
OK, Phil, so some interruption on your line, but we will carry on. Now, we should say that at the end of the video, this influencer did allow this wombat to go back to its mother, and both the baby wombat and the mother wandered off back into the bush. But you mentioned the reaction to the video. There was a petition, wasn't there, with thousands, tens of thousands of people signing it, calling for her to be deported from Australia.
Yes, and that really was heard at the highest levels of government, as we say, the Prime Minister getting involved and also the Home Affairs Minister, a man called Tony Burke. And he said that immigration officials were having a look at Sam Jones' visa with a potential for her deportation. But we understand a few hours ago she left on her own accord, and no suggestion, as far as we can tell, that any charges have been laid. If you look at the finer print of Australia's environmental and biodiversity legislation, it is illegal to harm or take any native wildlife in Australia. And as to whether that applies to Sam Jones, it may well be academic, given that she's left Australia, but what she's also left behind is a very loud chorus of condemnation.
Mm-hmm. And she has set now her Instagram to private, but there was a TikTok account set up, believed to be her, talking about the overreaction. And there are some who agree with her that there has been an overreaction.
Yes, there are advocates who believe that whilst foolhardy and daft, certainly Australia has far bigger environmental concerns. This is a country with a very bad record, for example, of mammal extinctions. It's estimated that each year feral cats in this country kill 270 million birds. So those are just two examples of Australia's environmental problems. And some advocates are worried that here we have a very foolhardy American tourist who's managed to garner more headlines than other very serious ecological problems in this country ever does. So in many ways, there is an imbalance and perhaps an over preoccupation with social media, not just here, but well beyond the shores of Australia.
Phil Mercer, BBC Australia correspondent on Today with Claire Byrne. And that's all we have time for on this edition of Playback Daily. So from me, Louise Herity, thanks for listening and have a great weekend.